Yeah. Welcome to season 5 of Sessions.
Yeah, it goes like this right here.
This is the year.
Like,
we get it.
Niggas always be hollering peace.
Season 1 was fun. Season 2, it was cool.
Every time I try to get a piece
season
of mind.
Season 3 was crazy.
Niggas try to get a piece of mind.
And season 4,
so I gotta grab my piece.
Got us ready.
It's the return of the gangsta. Gangsta.
This is the year we return to high stakes. This is the year we get our own place. This is the year we pay back every motherfucker we owe. This is the year. Listener note, if you would like to hear what happened at the beginning of this session and prior to it, if you would like my entire comeback story, 5 years in the making, including 2 fairly deep World Series of Poker main event runs, and numerous conversations with poker superstars such as Matt Moore, Garrett Adelstein, Doug Polk, Matt Berkey, Marley Cordero, and others, head on over to patreon.com/DGAFPokerPlayer. That's patreon.com/DGAFPokerPlayer and sign up to become a patron for $4.22, 22 cents a month or more. And go ahead and do that right now. It just takes a few moments. And not only do you gain access to about 900 hours of private recordings, including part 1 of this episode, but you also get membership to DGAF Community, an online community of communal folk. So go do that right now, and I'll wait for you. I'll take a sip of this Mountain Dew Zero Sugar Major Melon while you do it. All right. Thanks for signing up. I hope you enjoy both all the content and the amazing community. Poker Session 84 of 150. Hustler Casino Live, 7/18/22. Part 2, the stream continued. So part 1 left us off about 2 hours into the show on July 18th, 2022. And just to recap, I was very tired when I went on stage and I was getting manhandled by DJ Washburn in pots, verbally. I wasn't ready for the aggression, it was all in love, but I just wasn't, I didn't have my game up, and I kept running into it. Every time I 3-bet, someone would jam, and that can happen when you're as spewy as I am. You're just going to have periods of time where you run into the nuts over and over, and I put $200 in with 4-3 offsuit, and then Pepe made it 800, and it was just, I don't give grinders money, like, nope. I fold, and he had pocket aces, and I would have turned the nuts against him, and he would have had top set, and that was a little, you know, that's a little needle by the dealer. I don't remember who it was. And then I limped 7-6 offsuit, and everyone limped, and I had nothing, and I folded, and I just took a walk. I had to take a piss because I drink a lot, but also I needed to take a walk. I just didn't have my energy right. I wasn't in the zone at all, and I've been in the zone lately when playing on stream, and I just had a kind of an icky feeling, and sometimes you just got to get rid of that icky feeling one way or another. Focused breathing is a good thing to do. You'll see me doing that at the table sometimes, and then you just got to take a walk. And I had a game going out on the casino floor, and it was a jovial environment, and I walked up, and Aaron Queskin was all in against 2 players pre-flop. He had aces, they had kings, and it, you don't see that every day. I don't know that I've ever even seen it before. And he was so happy, and I gave him a hug. We had a bro hug, and it was just a weird moment. It was, all the ickiness went away in that moment, and I just felt good about life. And that might be the gayest thing you've ever heard, and that's okay. Gay is cool. I'm not gay, but that hug fucking revitalized me. And yeah, so I walked back to the stage, didn't feel icky, and sometimes that matters, and sometimes it doesn't. You know, we'll see. At 2:40:30, DJ Washburn straddles to 120. You can straddle any amount. And I just raised a 240. When someone has a huge straddle on, you can raise small. I have a queen jack offsuit, and it gets back around to him, and he goes all in. And I think he's very weak. I think his hand is weak. I almost want to call with queen jack offsuit for all my chips, but I decide against it. No, keep playing. You know, stay focused. I would, if I was rich, I would call here. True story. And he had ace rag offsuit, which makes sense. But yeah, at 245.40 will be the first thing that goes my way on this night in a significant, well, you'll see. 245.40, DJ Washburn raises to 120, and I call with nines. I don't need to keep blowing up pots preflop against him. He's showing a willingness to gamble heavy preflop. I'm better postflop than I am preflop, and I'm just going to flat here, and there's nothing wrong with keeping other players in the pot. He gives a lot of action, but he's a very talented player, and I'll just call and Barry calls. Okay, so it's three ways instead of two ways, and I got a good hand, pocket nines. I'm under-repped, and it comes 8-4-3 with two clubs, and I don't have any clubs, and there's 440 in the middle, and Barry leads into DJ Washburn and myself 500 into 440. I've played enough with Barry that this is top pair, a good amount, or a flush draw, a decent amount. I think in the old days it would be a flush draw more often than it is now. And he just doesn't want anyone to, he wants to protect his hands, see where he's at. And DJ Washburn folds. And so what do I do with my nines with no club? I'm raising. I'm going to play an irresponsibly large pot here just because I have a very good read on the situation. I raised a 1,500. Single raised pot. You want to put in 1,500 with nines on 8-4-3, two clubs after someone has overbet into the preflop raiser? Yeah, I do. Barry calls. Okay. I'm very confident in my head. The turn is the king, not a club. And I kind of ranged him. He could have a hand like a higher pair than me that he slow played, but I ranged him pretty much at top pair. And some draws. And so if he has the king of clubs in his hand, he's just getting the rest of my money. I send in 37.50. So this is a fucking overplay of pocket nines, if I've ever seen one. But given the reads, I think it's just actually very good. He snap called, and he had 8-6 offsuit, and the river was not an 8 or a 6. And so I won a massive pot there. Well over 10K, and that was nice. It was just pretty sick. One pair, not even top pair on the turn, getting it all in, and you have your opponent almost dead. And I mean, not almost dead, but you know, there's only five outs for him, 90-10, and you're gonna win that a lot. In the old days, I didn't. The river would be an 8 or a 6 in the last few years. Well, this year so far, knock on white Costco desk. I'm holding in these spots quite a bit, and my whole session has turned around in one hand. So I'm pretty close to even now. Might be winning a little bit. Not sure. I have 4-3 offsuit, and I call dark. I do this. I call under the gun dark. It's just what I do. It gives me more time to talk and drink, and I'm going to be in there a lot anyways, and I don't have to think. Just call dark, and then sometimes they raise, and sometimes I squeeze, and sometimes I fold, and sometimes I call. Here I call. I believe it was Barry who raised. 4-3 off. I'm going to defend. I give action. King 10-6. I check. He checks. Okay. I think he's going to have ace, queen, ace, jack here a lot. And the turn's a deuce, gives me a gut shot. I go ahead and lead my gut shot into him, calls quickly. I'm thinking he has ace, queen, or ace, jack here a lot. The river's a 10. And this is not the best bluff card because I'm not repping a ton here when I bet. And people are going to be inclined to call you down with ace high when the board pairs on the river. But I talk. I start talking to someone, and I know Barry's a very perceptive player. And talking is strength. Not many people can have the nut low, which I did. and fire their second barrel and talk about something. It just seemed strong. It wasn't. It was whatever. He folded ace high. So it's starting the momentum. You can feel it. You can feel it a little bit. And I had none prior to that bro hug out on the floor with Aaron Kweskin. It's just fucking weird. And felt better walking up. I just didn't, I guess because I've been playing on such a short roll for so long that any loss is devastating. Anytime I'm losing is devastating. It's true. And I need to shake that. I have a roll now. I've been fucking murking. I've been winning at a rate that you just don't win it at these stakes. And I just kind of maybe got some perspective back that it's all good. I got all these fucking good people in my life, and we're just gambling, and, you know, there's some edge involved, but here, just come back and play the pocket nines as well as you can. I mean, it wasn't rocket science, but, you know, I didn't fuck up at all in any way, and then the 4-3, that's good, gets through. If I maybe seem nervous or whatever, he picks up on it and he calls, just... That's the difference between having that monkey on your back or not. You have the monkey on your back at a poker table. I've had it on there so many times. You're readable. People fucking pick off your bluffs with ace high. It's off for some reason. And now you can just kind of control everything. You can just sell whatever you want to sell so subtly that it doesn't seem like you're selling anything. Like you're having a conversation with someone else. You're not table talking to your opponent because that might be pretty obvious you're trying to make them think so. But if you're doing it to someone else, it's subtle. And yeah, so we got a little momentum going. And I get 6-4 offsuit in a great squeeze spot. I squeezed to 1,200. Just read the table as weak and they all fold. I win $430 there with 6-4 offsuit. Okay, I'm starting to feel like me again at the table. I have to fold ace-9 of diamonds to DJ Washburn's 3-bet. I got players behind me. It turned out that no one had a great hand, but you got to be okay with that. That's just not a... When you have an aggressive player on your right, you're going to have to fold some hands because there's an opener, and that person is 3-betting, and you ace-9 of diamonds is a pretty good hand. Whatever, I folded it. It's not the end of the world. At 323... I had pocket kings, and I flopped top set, king, queen, 8-2 diamonds, and I went ahead and bet about a third of the pot, and because it would just really set off alarm bells in the whole building, everyone would have to evacuate if I checked back any flop. I'm just a continuation bet a shit ton, especially in 3-bet pots and what have you, and it just would be obvious that I had a monster if I check back and then try to put money in later. So I might as well just bet small. I do. He calls. The turn's a 10. King, queen, 8-2 diamonds. Turn 10. I lose to ace, jack, or jack, you know, whatever, of diamonds, or jack, 9. And that's okay. I'm going to bet. And if he raises, I'll just call. And he just calls. And now the river is not a fantastic card at all. It's the 9 of diamonds. And it's... For a final board of king, queen, 8-2 diamonds, I have pocket kings. I bet the flop small. Turn 10, I bet again. He called, and the river's a 9 of diamonds, and he leads. And I don't believe he has the nuts here by any stretch. I think we probably would have played a bigger pot earlier. I have the king of diamonds in my hand, and I took a while here. It wasn't taking a while. What I was taking a while for was I was going to bluff with top set, which is probably a little bit too elaborate in Max Payne Monday, but I really, just in case he made a straight or a small flush, I wanted to put a bunch in and with the King of Diamonds, like, and just, I have to have a bigger flush and have him hero fold. It might be too elaborate. It probably is bad. It's high level thinking, which if you're going to put high level thinking in a game like this, that's bad. And so I just called. You know, it would have sucked if he had diamonds or a jack or whatever, but no, he had like 8-4 or something, just had a pair, and he was just gambling and having fun. And then for a while I get suited connectors and I'm getting squeezed out of pots, and that's okay. And I don't know what this note means. Oh, I have jack 10 and I won against Margot. I believe she raised me on jack high flop, and I called, and then we just checked it down. I thought she played fine for her first time on stream, and I think she's going to be a big part of this show. That's just my prediction. And I'm just doing nothing for a while. That's poker is, you just, for a while, you're just doing nothing. People are playing big pots. They're taking a while. And big pots, people can take a while, or they're setting up slow rolls, what have you. And that's fine. And then I 3-bet ace king. I think I took it down. And now it's time for my best play after a sip of this Mountain Dew Zero Sugar Major Melon. $418.50. So I'm thinking about linking these my best play and worst play in the episode notes. I'll get there soon. Sound guy was supposed to do that for me, but he's been on a real bender these days. So he's hardly even here at the Sessions headquarters. But 418.50. So not quite 4 hours into the show, because the first 30 minutes is countdown, but we're getting there. And Barry limps for $40. We're playing 10-20 with a $20 big blind and a $40 third blind. It's in a permanent straddle. It's mandatory. We do this every week. And David raises to 200, and that's Dr. David Namark. If you've paid attention to my story, he's been a big part of my comeback. And Hillary with an H calls. She's just an awesome person on the show and becoming a good friend. And DJ Washburn, Mr. Action, raises to 1,200. I'm in the small blind with King Queen suited. Here's the first semi-tough spot. I already have $10 in there, so I'm pretty committed to this 1,200. No. It's kind of tough because this is such a good hand, King Queen suited. And you will see people, and people that are very good at online poker might say this is a 4-bet or fold spot. And I don't believe that. I decided on calling. I didn't want to, the way he's playing, I can't 4-bet and fold. So I'm going to end up getting 16K in with King, in a 10-24, 400 big blinds in with King Queen suited. Seems like an overplay. Folding to the 3-bet seems like an underplay. And so I think it's best to just play. I like flatting 3-bets with suited broadways a lot. And you know, sometimes if it's a normal, if it's, you know, if David opened to 120 and DJ Washburn went to 400, sure, then I could put the 4-bet in, but we're already at that sizing now. It's 1200, and this is why live poker is both easy and hard, because it's not, what do you do against a 3-bet in the small blind when the 3-better is very wide and the opener is not super wide and the person in the middle's pretty wide? And what do you do? Well, sure, maybe it's 4-better fold in a general sense, but what do you do when the first guy went to 5x and then the next guy went 6x that 5x? So it's 30x now, if that's right. Is that right? Yeah, it is. We're at 30x. So now it's not 4-better fold. It's okay, you're gonna have to flat, and it's okay. When you flat, he's gonna think things about your hand, and he's probably not gonna think King Queen suited is in there, and yeah. So I flat, and David says, well, DGAF plays solid now. I think I have to fold. I'm not worried about you, Washburn. And it's pretty funny. And David's gonna get up, he's gonna take one for the team, because Sashimi has a VIP coming in. This is, I mentioned this in part one, that people need to get off her case for her VPIP. Like, if you think the rules are the same, if you think her VPIP needs to be as high as my VPIP, the rules are not the same for a middle-aged white guy poker vet as they are for a young, attractive woman who does a lot of things like bring people to the games and get our show out to a huge Japanese audience. She doesn't have to. You want to cry about it? Fucking cry about it. That you're not Sashimi. But she doesn't have to. She can play however the fuck she wants. That's reality. That's just the way it goes. And anyways, she has someone coming in that's going to be a lot of action. And And David says, well, I'll happily give up my seat and just give me an invite back sometime. That team player. Anyways, he folds, Hillary folds, and there's $2,920 in the pot. And I'm just seeing now that I'm going to get stuff on Twitter like, that's favoritism, that's whatever. Like, yeah, man, it is. Attractive young women don't have to play the same as dudes no one wants to look at. It's just the way it is. Not my fault. I didn't make the rules. But anyways, $2,920 in the pot. And I'm out of position. And the flop comes jack 6-6 with two clubs. I flop two overs and a flush draw. And he's saying, you have eights to tens here, pretty much. Well, I would flat pretty much anything I'm continuing with. We just I think I would be putting in with kings or aces or king X or ace X. I might be putting in the four bet, but the rest of it. So he's saying that, and so it's nice to know he's thinking that. And I go ahead and lead here 1,100, which you're probably wondering, you lead 1,100 when it was 1,200 pre. Is this weak? No, this ain't weak. This is not weak at all. This is representing pocket queens. It could easily be pocket jacks. I should have a strong range here. And I do. It just doesn't have to be eights through tens. And he calls. Okay. And the turn is a very interesting card. It's the 10 of spades. And if I had jacks full or tens full, I would be checking here and hoping to induce a bluff or an overplay from him. And so I'm going to start by doing that. I'm open-ended with a flush draw, and there's 5120 in the pot. And he says something about Jack Bauer for some reason, which is funny. And he bets 2400. And I like that show 24 as well. And now I got some stuff to think about. And he's talking to me while I'm thinking. And it's funny, when you're not in the zone, sometimes someone talking to you can fuck you up. But when you've been playing well and running well, they're talking. You can see it if you watch this hand. He's talking. You can almost see like the wheels churning inside my head. And I'm wondering what to do here. Like the only thing I'm not considering is folding, obviously. So is it raise? Is it jam? Is it call? And because you don't want to lose the ace high, that I don't think he's strong. And so you don't want to lose the ace high. And he said, well, this could be the best hand you played if you do the right thing. And when he says that, I think he's fucking really light here. I think he has air of some sort. So in this moment, I decide I am going to call, and I'm going to call any river. Unless he bets small on the river and it seems like he's trying to value tell me, then I'm going to jam over a small bet. So I took a while and him talking, and you can see it, like you can almost see the wheels churning. And some of you probably like, you don't think of anything, you just gamble maybe. But anyways, I just decide I'm fucking calling here with king high on the river. If he had ace high, I don't think he would bet here because he has showdown value. And when he said that comment, I just take the ace highs out. And I don't think he's betting a little pair here. It just didn't seem like it. It seemed like he wanted me to fold. So there are hands. Everything he has should have some equity. He could bink a pair as long as it's not a club, right? Or as long as it's not a nine. But so what? If he does, he does. If he binks, he binks, like Drago said. And so he's not, if he binks a pair on the river, he's not betting a lot. He's just happy to show it down. Unless it seems like he's getting really fancy for showdown value, like betting small, then I will raise over that. And anyways, that's what took so long. I feel like this is the best I thought through a big spot in a while. He's a tough player. He's very wide. He's very comfortable to stakes. He plays much bigger than this. And I just decided I'm calling you down with king high on the river. And I don't care, you know, obviously if I make a flush or whatever, or a straight, I'll be happy to like check raise all in or whatever. But I'm calling with king high. I have taken ace high out because people are happy. They know they can be good with ace high, and there's a chance they can be good with ace high. And it just didn't, I took it out when he said this could be your best play. So right or wrong, I took it out, and that gives me the nuts on the turn with king queen on jack 6-6-10. And that might not make sense, and it might be stupid, but that's the beauty of live poker. You could have stupid thought process, and if it works, it feels good. And anyways, the river was a queen, so gave me top pair, and I'm going to check that over to him. I was checking all rivers, and check it over to him, and he starts talking again, and then he says, in your honor, I'm going to bet 6,900. He looks at me, puts 6,900, and I just fucking snap call one chip. I'd already decided it wasn't so much a read on the river. I'd already just decided I'm calling to call on the turn. You know, you don't, it's such a weird spot. You don't usually have that spot where like you're calling to call for sure because the board can change. But no matter what happened, I just decided on that, on jack 6-6-10, jack 6-6, two clubs, turn 10. I have a huge drive, lots of equity, but I don't need to be bluffing against his $2,400 turn bet. I just don't. It's, I'm ahead here. And if I'm ahead, all I'm worried about on the river is him making a pair that isn't a club or a nine. And so what? If he does that, it's just a fucking bad beat. Who cares? Otherwise, I win this pot, right? And he had 8-7 of clubs. And so it just felt, and you know, it's not a good slow roll spot anyways, because if you're pretty sure the guy's bluffing and you just have a bluff catcher, it's like a lame slow roll. So I just fucking snap called. If he was a bad player, I wouldn't have. I would have made it seem tougher. I just knew I was calling. So it doesn't matter. And I just fucking snapped it off and won a pretty big pot with river top pair. He bluffed off 83, he bluffed off about 10K, and it's nice to win 10K like that. And then the very next hand, he opens an I3 bet to 500 with 6-5 of hearts, and it gets back to him, and he makes it 2K. And I'm not folding. I'm gambling, and I don't think he's super strong here. So I call with 6-5 of hearts, and I get a very nice flop. Ace 9-7 with two hearts. In a four-bet pot, I have combo draw, and he bets 1,500. What to do here? Another combo draw. You just call. You just call, and he's not going to think you have hearts. He's going to think you have an ace. And then you call, and then you get to win. And then if you improve, you can do other stuff. But anyways, the turn's a 10 of diamonds, and he gives up. You can just tell he gives up. And so what would I do if I had an ace here? I would definitely check. I could have, I don't know, I just played it like I had an ace, just pot control. Well, I don't. I have six high, but I do believe I'm going to win this pot on the river. And maybe I wouldn't, but this hand felt pretty good. The one before it felt pure. This one felt pretty good. My plan was just rep the ace. He's going to check the river as well and just put a small bet out there if you miss, and he'll fold. And river was the ace of hearts. So it gives me a flush. But it does something else. It's harder to rep that ace. So I don't want to bet small here and rep like jacks or queens because he can just make easy fold. I want to bet a little bit bigger because it's harder to have an ace and just make it a little more polarized and whatever. He's not folded. So two hands in a row that I think were my best play. The king, queen of clubs, pre-flop, like there's no cookie cutter fucking chart to remember what to do with king, queen of clubs in a 10, 20, 20, 40 game when it's 1,200 in front of you and you're in the small blind and stacks are 16K effective or whatever. There's no, because you got to factor in everything. David went to 200, Hillary called, and DJ Washburn, who's super action, went to 1,200 and plays much bigger. This is live poker. This is the beauty of live poker. The second hand is, it was funny. I guess they were doing a poll of who the table captain was. I'm typically going to be the, I love battling. So I'm going to go for it against anyone. And anyways, so I'm going to 3-bet the next hand, 6-5 suited. And I'm going to call the 4-bet. I'm just going to call the 4-bet in position. And that one's a little different. It came ace, just a great flop, obviously. Ace, 9-7, 2 hearts. He bets 1,500, and I'm going to call. And then he's going to give up, or if he bets again on the turn, I can, with no fold equity, I can just call and try and realize and fold the river. But perhaps with a pot size bet behind on the turn, a shove would have been better. I'm very open-minded to the second one, the 6-5 of hearts. I felt like I was going to win no matter what, but then, you know, he ended up having king, queen of clubs in that hand. What if the river's a queen? Does he hero call me? Does he check and hero call? Maybe. So the second one wasn't as pure, but it felt good in the moment. Like, I'm going to win this. I'm just going to rep an ace. I'm pretty good at, I'm a storyteller. That's what I do on my podcast. And that's what I do in hands. And that's what I do in the commentary booth. That's why I really sometimes get, well, I get creative with backstories for players and whatnot. But I'm a storyteller at heart. I was a writer as a kid. And that's what you do in hands, is you tell stories. And you also try and be an investigator. You try and, is their story making sense right now? Because mine is. If I three bet ace jack or ace queen and called the 4-bet and it came ace 9-7 2 hearts, I would call. And then when the turn's a 10, and if I have ace jack, you better believe if he checks, I'm checking back. I just am. And then making a decision. So I felt like I told the story. But then again, maybe shoving is better. Who knows? But I liked those two hands in a row. And then this VIP got in. I need another sip of this. And a VIP is someone who is too well off in life to give a shit about folding when they should fold. They're always, almost always, very smart, capable of being great players if they want. But why would you want to be if you were wealthy? I wouldn't. Fuck. If I was Bill Klein, I would have a different playing style. But anyways, so this guy raised. I defended with 10-9 of diamonds, and you don't need to be 3-betting a VIP. There's no fold equity, and you're playing out of position against a wild card. And anyways, I called with 10-9 of diamonds, and it came queen 10-9. So bottom two, I checked. He bet. I don't always check raise here, but from what I heard from this guy, it was just time to get 10K in with him if he had a queen or a pocket pair or something. And he folded. He had ace-deuce offsuit. So I like this. It's against many players. I'm not check raising bottom two on queen 10-9 really deep. But against, from what I heard about this guy, I was, Jeff. And I told hand history in part one where I said I called Barry and then it came and he jammed on 9-6-6. That one might have been wrong. This is the one where I made it 300 with king jack of spades. And I think DJ Washburn had put the $100 straddle on, or maybe he opened. And Barry went to 1,300. I could fold king jack of spades to this, I guess. But I called. It's a really good hand. And it came 9-6-6 and rainbow. And he jammed 10,000. That was an easy fold. I think he might have had aces. And I do invite the players. I was the one who discovered Hillary and interacted with Sashimi on Twitter, and same with Margot. And so I'm going to be a little bit protective of them. And you heard me rant about people giving Sashimi shit for her VPIP and whatever. And Barry's a funny dude, and he's old school, and he gets a little bit out of line. So just a subtle way to like make sure he doesn't get too out of line. I called him Mr. Huxtable, just kind of referring to Bill Cosby. And I don't know, what was Bill Cosby's name? I know his last name was Huxtable. I didn't know, I call him Mr. Huxtable. Just to kind of like, hey man, be a little chill. You're good, and you know, nothing happened, but I feel like you got to do that. When you sense things are getting a little too old school at the table, you gotta do stuff like that. I don't know if that makes sense. But I had ace six of hearts, and I was free rolling against my girl Hillary. It was ace XX, two hearts. I had a better kicker, and yeah, whatever. We chopped. I'm happy to chop. And then at 5:14, I made it 600 with pocket queens. Hillary and Jeff called. It came ace 8 6. I checked. Jeff bet 1300. I hadn't seen much from him. I saw him win a nice pot with aces right when he sat down, and I called though. I didn't. People. When people outflop you, when you have queens, it comes ace, 8 6, they check, and then they bet the turn. Well, he bet the flop. Okay, I'm going to call 1,300 with queens on ace, 8 6. The turn's a king, I checked, and he bet 2,400. He's not repping fucking shit here, but maybe he got lucky with a hand, like aces up. And I thought for a while, and I folded, and he showed a 6. And I was like, oh, okay, so you have ace, 6, or pocket 6s, he actually had 9 6, so he owned my face. But two overcards to my queens. You can't play every hand like Garrett Adelstein. Yeah, especially on a Monday, you can't. So it's fine. That was it for the stream. Played 51% of hands, which is a concession I make as someone who's pretty good at poker. Well, if you play 51% of hands in a full ring game, if you play half the hands, some will say it's impossible for you to win. So not like the ante game where you can just throw $5 in there and throw it away, but we have to put in 40. So you, someone say you can't win, and I just try and, like, you know, it's just kind of handicapping yourself a little bit, as I'm a longtime pro, but I have other stuff going on in my life. I don't work on my game. I don't do any of that shit. So it's just, well, it's fair. If I'm pretty good at thinking about hands and whatnot, well, I better be in there a lot with some dog shit. I better be providing action. I better give up the pre-flop advantage. And DJ Washburn did the same thing. He actually beat me in VPIP. And yeah, if we're both there grinding, the game sucks and it's not going to work. So, but it's not easy booking wins with 50% VPIP in a fucking nine-handed game. It's just not easy. The saving grace is that it's a big enough game to where there's fold equity and you're deep, and deep stack poker is fun, and it really opens up a lot of doors. And anyways, I won 18.1K on stream. I spent a lot on drinks. Whenever Darren's there, everyone's got alligator arms when the drink tabs come. I think I spent $1,400 on drinks or something on this night. Whatever. I'm just running super hot. I don't mind when I'm running super hot to do what I can to be generous. And then we're going to continue playing. And so I wrote down my final count because I got to send it to the Steak Kings guy. I write down Sashimi's final count. And then I loan someone in the game 2K. I just got to do a lot of things as the organizer, and it's all fair. And then immediately it's time for my worst play. I had ace king, and I put in a cold 4-bet against DJ Washburn. And it came jack 6 deuce, and I put a continuation bet in there. And the turn was a 7, and I don't think I'm repping much if I bet here. I think I'm going to pot control my big pairs on jack 6 deuce 7. That's a 2-pair card, of course, if he had 6-7. And he checked back, and now he's capped at 1-pair. And the river was a good card. I think it was like a deuce. And I bet a lot. And he went in the tank. And I was almost positive he was capped at 1-pair. And so this is a line I see all the time commentating, where the person, like, is very aggressive preflop. And I had ace king, so I could have had, you know, a big pair or ace king here pretty much when I put in the cold 4-bet out of position. I bet on jack 6 deuce, I believe it was 3 ways, and only DJ Washburn called, and the turn's a 7. I'm just always going to pot control an overpair, and you see this on stream a lot, and then people go for value. Once the person checked back the turn, they capped their range at 1-pair, and now it's just free. You can go for value, and they're going to talk themselves into, well, they showed weakness, now they have to call, blah, blah, blah. And I just told a good story, and DJ Washburn said, fuck your story, eventually. He thought for a while and called, and I think he had a jack. So I lost 10K immediately in that hand. So we took turns bluffing off 10K to each other, and that I was getting fucked. So I'm going to lose all the money I won. And it's a private game. We usually don't let anyone who didn't play on stream, unless it's the accountant, play in our game after, because it doesn't make sense to. You're up there on stage. It's draining under the bright lights, putting on a show, being extra social, extra VPips, drinking a ton, you know, and now you're going to let grinders come in and you're going to let in. So it looked like the game wouldn't survive on this night. So I just opened it up to anyone down the casino floor. Remember, I had a game, a 10-20 game pretty much going on. That's where I got my bro hug. And so it fills up and I immediately run another bluff against someone who's very good, who got sat on my right, and I could tell he would just have to fold eventually. And I don't know, I was just in, it didn't feel like a pun. It felt like, well, I just got caught bluffing, so I should have it here. And then I went fucking ham in this hand. I had queen, eight of clubs, and Jeff opened, and I three bet, and we are pretty deep. And he led on 7-4-4 with a club, and I called queen, eight of clubs. And the turn was a 7, so 7-4-4-7. He led again, but he seemed weak, and people won't lead a 7 here. And so I raised just to rep the 7. I could easily have a 7 3 betting at this point. I have a beer and a cocktail in my hand at both times. And he 3 bet the 7-4-4-7, and I just decided he didn't have it, and I just sent it all in. And he thought for a bit and folded, and I showed the queen eight of clubs. And then I later got it in with him with ace king preflop, and he had 5-3, and I held. And I played for 11 hours total, and I think I won 28,000 after the state king. So it was pretty blurry, but another sun run on a Max Payne Monday. And sign up to become a patron if you haven't yet, and you'll be able to hear what happens next on Monday. But before that, we're going to review the scoreboard. Every year, I set up a scoreboard. It's goal setting. It's short-term goals. It's yearly goals to get you to your bigger goal, right? So the patrons know this, but I've talked about this podcast is my third child. I made just a lot of sacrifices for my first two children, my 13-year-old daughter and my 9-year-old son. I wanted their living situation to be stable when I initiated divorce, and I basically was homeless. Luckily I know a lot of good people and generous people, but I was basically homeless, and like I'd be staying in dingy motels and working. I've worked every single day, pretty much, you know, give or take, every single day since I initiated that divorce, and just round the clock and traveling and just wearing myself out. I did that sacrifice for them. And then this podcast has been the thing that's helped me go from a really self-destructive degen to a pretty like goal-oriented, balanced degen. Like the only time I really degen is Monday nights, and that's still, you know, I'm playing on stream. That's the only time I drink, I volume drink these days. And it just makes sense. I work so hard every other day, and I parent my ass off, and my situation has improved a ton, but it's all due to this podcast sessions. It's been my therapy. It became a source of income out of thin air. I just started it to document an impossible comeback. There was just no light at the end of the tunnel. But fuck it, you gotta just keep trying. You gotta just keep going, right? And then I just ended up spilling my guts to all these people and telling my life story, and they really liked it. And I said, oh, maybe I'll put this. I don't want to do ads. Maybe I'll put this on a Patreon page. And you know, all the haters on 2+2 are like, fuck you, there's a trillion podcasts, no one ever pay for a podcast. And so, you know, you say fuck you to me, and my response is always fuck you to you. And now you made me mad, and I'm going to prove you wrong. Just some immature shit that is good if you need to get some shit done. And anyways, it's really grown. The first season I was just experimenting. I just wanted to be hand histories only. And then I said, well, that's boring. Like, I'm playing fucking 2-5, 2-5-10, occasionally 5-10, the lowest I've ever played in my career. I never even played $5 big blind. And it's boring. It's nine-handed, and we're not deep. There's nothing exciting. So I started focusing on the people, the dealers, the cocktail waitresses, the players, of course. And people were like, oh, that's kind of cool. That's kind of funny. And then I started talking about what I did before and after sessions. Like, oh, I kind of like that perspective of who you are and why you're so tilty in this and that. And then I started getting into the backstory of how I spiraled to rock bottom, and I was unabashed. And this podcast has helped me deal with some pain, some deep-rooted pain that just made me that self-destructive fucking massive degen. And every time I spew into this microphone, the pain goes away a little bit, and I become a little, I'd say I'm not even self-destructive anymore. I'm starting to be kind of, I'm still extremely generous with my money, maybe a little bit self-destructive with the money as I'm coming back up. But man, I just work every single day. I try and take care of myself. And anyways, it's my third child and I want to keep it going, but I put so much time. I write every single day for this podcast because I tell every day of my life, and it's so consuming that I have to justify it as a man with debt and bills and kids living this really great life. I have to be able to justify the time I put into it. And that's what this scoreboard will tell me. If we reach a certain amount of points by the end of this year, then we run it back another year for a sixth season. So we're going to do the countdown. It's called the Countdown to 2023 Scoreboard Check. And this is, we've completed week 28 of 50. So we're 56% of our way through this journey. And the goal was to, and you heard it in the intro, this is the year, right? After 4 years of struggle, that we return to high stakes. We've done that. I'm playing, you know, it says 10-20, but it ain't 10-20. It's 10-20-40, and it gets much bigger afterwards. It's been 100, 200 a bunch, and it's and bigger. And so, and this is the year get our own place. It took this many years to have an apartment in San Diego, and I got one now, and it's nice and quiet for when I record, and it's nice and safe for my kids. And like, it's, man, I used to record at the Roadway, and I would have two mattresses up like a teepee to block out the crazy neighbors. And like, my kids would be, you know, I'd be like trying to turn on some music if someone was outside trying to score a dime bag, or there's hookers doing business. It's I've come a long way, and yeah. So I want to finish the story perhaps next year, season 6, where I get all the way out of debt, I start to get money again, and I start to do good things with it. Not personal savings or investments, but just really try and use this reach that I have that you only can acquire through fucking spilling your guts unabashed at any cost over and over and over and over for 5 years. So, yeah, that was quite the intro to this scoreboard check. The first line, there are four lines where we can score points, and then the fifth one tells us how we're doing overall. The first line is hours. I set a goal to play 15 hours a week. Might sound like not a lot for a poker pro, but I'm not really a poker pro anymore. I'm a podcaster, I'm a commentator, I'm a game builder, I have a startup, I run a community, and I'm a single dad as fuck. So that was ambitious, and played 19 hours this week. So we're at 472 hours on the year, and the pace is 420. I thought this would be the toughest line to hit, and we're 52 points ahead of pace, trying to get to 750 hours on the year. Wins, every time I win a session, we get 5 points for this board, and every time I lose, it's -5. And why is this important? Well, it's all one long session, right? And if you're that robotic, tip of the cap to you, but I need to be focused on winning. I need to be focused on winning sessions, and that leads to winning money. It's just what I've decided, and it's good for my self-esteem, or maybe not my self-esteem, but it's just good for my soul to win sessions. And so every time we win one, it's 5 points. Every time we lose, -5. I play 3 a week. The goal is to win 2 out of 3. It used to be, when I was serious poker pro, I would win over 3 out of 4 because I could put in long sessions. I wouldn't fuck up. I worked in my game all the time. That was fucking 15 years ago. So I'm a grown man now, and I play poker. I'm a rec player now. So, yeah, but I got 3 wins this week. So that's 15 points, and we're at 160 points on the year. The pace is 140. We're 20 ahead of pace. Trying to get to 250 points. We have 50 weeks each season of sessions, and it's sold on a 2-week delay, and it takes 2 weeks to get the new intro and cover art and all that shit up each year. And so for those keeping score at home, we've won 58 sessions and lost 26 this year. Sun running, no doubt, but also playing a little bit better than previous years. Yeah, 2. The next line is Patrons. Every Patron we add, we get 4 points, and every Patron we lose, -4. A very fair scoreboard, I believe. And someone signed up named Recreational Player. Signed up at $27 a month. Thank you very much, Recreational Player. If you go on patreon.com/DGAFPokerPlayer, there are 6 tiers, and they each have different perks. And the $27 a month means you get to fire sports and book bets, and it's all neutral EV. And if you have a sports betting habit, it's going to bust you unless you find people to do it with no juice. It just turns everything into a flip. It's all for the sweats. And anyways, thank you, Recreational Player or Recreation Player. And Boyd went to $51 a month. $51 a month, you get to buy pieces of me every time I play on stream, and I don't charge any markup, and there's no VIG, because Steak Kings is cool. And I used to say that, I guess they're all, each tier is, at $422 a month, you get every drop I've ever done, including my first podcast, Solicited Advice Podcast, that I did with David, who played on the show. And you get every drop of sessions, and you get a forum, like 2+2 poker forums, but it's dgafcommunity.com, and it's just all these really great people from all over the world. Just, they're communal. That's why they found my podcast and liked it. They're not judgmental. If you're judgmental, you hate my podcast. I have so many flaws in the way I live my life. But then if you just accept I just am who I am, and maybe you are who you are, you get this really incredible group. And so that's just the entry level. The next level up is 844. You get Slack, which is basically social media without the toxicity. Anyone that tries to be toxic, get the fuck out. I will happily cancel a pledge anytime for the sake of the community. And you get to share stuff with others all 24 hours a day. You get to organize meetups. So that's the second tier. I used to say the third tier is the most plus EV. It's 1688. You get essentially rake-free poker. We have home games on Poker Bros. And there is rake to pay Poker Bros, but everything left over goes to putting people in the main event. We put 2 people in the main event this year, and every single person at 1688 or higher had equity in them. And they're punters, so they punted off and didn't cash, but last year we had a good player in. No, just kidding. But last year, Check Raise Charles cashed, and people made their yearly fees back, and they didn't even know it. They're like, what is this? I said, you had equity in Check Raise Charles. You didn't even know it. So that's, I used to say that's the most plus EV one, but then again, if you're a sports bettor, not paying juice, it doesn't take long. Say you bet $1,000. Well, that's $50 in juice, right? If you're betting $1,000 a month, that's $50 in juice if you're going to win half, because you only pay juice when you lose, right? So it's that's $50. So, being at $27 is just pretty plus EV there. In addition to getting that sweat, that equity in the main event, well, then at 51, you get all that, everything I've listed, and you can buy pieces of me on stream. And I'm a soul reader. I don't work on my game. I've never touched a solver in my life. I kind of am a solver, though, and when it comes to live poker, and I've played this game long enough that I'm pretty sure it's a plus EV investment. So that's what Boyd did. Thank you, Boyd. Morgan signed up. Thank you, Morgan. Someone went down to 422. Very cool. I like when people don't cancel. If they don't care about this and that and this, just go to where you get the content. at 422. And then Zimsaw went to 51. And I think he had a piece of me for this win and probably made his 51 and then some back real quick. And then someone deleted, and then another person went to 51 Desert Fish. Yeah, this is pretty, plus EV is, you're seeing a more focused version of me, and I won't always sunrun like this. I will lose, but overall it's just plus EV in my humble opinion. And then Steven signed up. Thank you, Steven. Nap and Crash went to 1688. Can play some online poker with some cool people. And then Ton went to 51. Thank you, Ton. And Ton is probably someone buying pieces every week. And then Lucas signed up. And we netted 5 Patrons. So that's 20 points, right? Because we got 5 more than we had the week before. We're at 644 points on the year, and the pace is only 336. That's what's up. So we're 308 ahead of pace. And the pace is 600, so we're already ahead of that goal. But I'd love to destroy this goal. I would love to get so many patrons that I can start putting resources into the community. The perks are already great, but when I can have resources of, okay, people working on different aspects of the community to build it and to enforce the one rule, don't be a nit. Don't be a nit. That's the only rule. And nits are people that take more than they give. Whatever you want, like, You need some advice, people will love to help you. And then, you know what, when someone asks for advice and it's your expertise, you better chime in. And anyways, that might be the long term, is just have so many patrons and really make DGAF community something. It already is something special. And we had the honeymoon phase where it was just like dreamy. It was utopia online. And then, you know, we've dealt with some growing pains and some people needed to be weeded out. And but the culture's still there of give and take and no judgment and all that. And maybe once I get flush again, I could start putting my efforts into this community. And then who knows what could happen. We could actually do some good things in the world. And that's, you know, perhaps grandiose, and that's fine. The next one is the weakest one. The fourth line is the weakest line on the board. It's Poker Rags, my startup, which was cruising along and growing and about to take off. And then this year we put all of our focus into Hutzler Casino Live, and some things have happened where we got a little undercut. And it really fucked us, and that's just the way it is. I don't sugarcoat anything, I don't know how much of it was intentional, and it definitely wasn't from. It just kind of happened, but it fucked us, and so it's struggling mightily. And I'm trying to revitalize it, and I'm hoping Margo, who played on the stream, will be a big part of that as the ambassador. And yeah, it's just back to the drawing boards. But anytime someone orders off of my page on Poker Rags, so you just go on pokerrags.us, click on Team Poker Rags, and click on DGAF. There's a lot of stuff to buy. You get a point. Okay. And so Wenzel in Köln, Germany bought something off my page. Thank you very much, Wenzel in Köln, Germany. Appreciate it. And that was the only customer that bought something off of my page. And 1 point on the week, 59 on the year. The pace is 237. We're 178 behind pace. But I've also been too busy to address some of the needs of Poker Rags. We need a new designer. I don't know why it's so hard to get a designer. And someone reached out to me, and I need to get back to them on Twitter. But yeah, anyways, 178 points behind pace to try and get to 423. So you add those four up, and then if we get to 2023 points this year, well, then we have a podcast again in the year 2023. Pretty cool how that works. Got 55 points this week. We have 1,335 on the year. The pace is 1,133. So we're 202 points ahead of pace to what we want, 2023. Then there'll be season 6 of sessions and perhaps season 7, but I really want to get to where I'm flush again. That was the original goal when I kind of woke up, opened my eyes at rock bottom is, holy shit, I'm $250,000 in debt. I got all these massive bills. I'm sick of poker. I'm scared of the deck, this and that. I want to get flush again somehow, some way. I think that will happen in season 6. And then, but I don't know. Whatever. Have a great weekend. Peace. Sessions is brought to you by Poker Rags. Poker Rags, we dress poker players. Sessions is also brought to you by the Hustler Casino in Los Angeles. Lowest rake, best food, and craziest action in town. If you would like to have access to every drop of Sessions, over 700 of them and counting, plus access to my other podcast, Solicited Advice Podcast, and or you want to be a part of the sick as fuck community I'm building, DGAF Community, head on over to patreon.com/DGAF Poker Player and sign up to become a patron today.